The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel, the TNA.
Hell yeah, it's episode 316 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 2nd, 2014. I am the Solid Monster, and as Stone Cold might say, we gonna call this thing in the ring here this week. I might even have to take a swig of Red Bull for the working man, or water, which is all I have. I have no Red Bull, unfortunately. If you listen to the Steve Austin show, you get that reference. If not, just ignore it. Really quickly here, PayPal shout-outs for people who have donated to the Sound Off this week. Colin Kerr, Leon Simmons, and Brad Yike. Thank you very much for your donations. Very much appreciated. You can make a PayPal donation to this podcast on thesolidmonster.com. You'll see the donation box there. You can give what you can when you want to. You can give multiple times. You can give once, whatever. It's entirely up to you. But that is still the most direct way to contribute to the show and to support the show. And also what you can do, if you want to, here in celebration of episode 316, is buy yourself the official Sound Off 316 t-shirt, which is now up in the Solid Monster Sounds Off Superstore. You can go to solidmonster.spreadshirt.com. You'll see the shirt right there on the main page. And I want to give a thank you to Lance Topley, who's one of our listeners. You may remember a few weeks ago I was talking about the awful, crappy Daniel Bryan merchandise before they finally got him some new shirts. I was talking about the shirt with the goat that was vomiting out of its neck, all of this awful stuff, the beard brim hat, which should be wiped off the face of the earth. But I want to mention Lance here and give him some credit because it was his idea. I hadn't even thought of it. You think it's a slam dunk idea, do a 316 t-shirt for episode 316. He's the one who actually brought it up to me and said, dude, you should do the shirt. Here's the artwork for it. So I want to give him a big thank you here. And if you want to get the shirt again, it's up in the Superstore right now. Also, many of you know that I attended the Jim Ross one-man show here in New York this weekend, one of two shows that he had at the Gramercy Theater in Manhattan. Actually, the very first one in the afternoon, which is the first show of this series of shows that he plans to do. So we were the first. And it was very, very cool stuff. I have to say that if JR comes to town, and he's going to be doing more of these, he's doing one WrestleMania week in New Orleans. If you have the chance to go, I encourage you to do so. It is well worth it. And I went and I recorded a Sound Off extra to fit in all the details, because we have a lot to cover on this week's show as it is. So if you want my full thoughts on the Jim Ross one-man show, what he talked about, the good, the bad, any criticisms, the Q&A session, some of the more interesting stories that he told, and some of the funny ones, too. All of that is up on our YouTube channel, probably by the time you listen to this. If it's not, it's going to go up ASAP. I plan to get it up later on this evening. So head on over to the official Sound Off YouTube channel. Subscribe to us there. You can watch the video. It's well over half an hour. Has my full thoughts on the one-man show. But the short version of it is thumbs up. Good stuff. And if he comes to town, it's definitely well worth picking up a ticket and going and listening to Jim Ross, who's been in the business of wrestling for over 40 years. He's got so many freaking stories to tell. I could sit there and listen to the guy for 6 hours. As it was a little less than two, and I feel like he could have gone another six if he wanted to. Well worth it. So if you have a chance to check it out, please do so, and do check out our video on YouTube. Speaking of our official YouTube channel, one other reason for you to subscribe and keep an eye on it in the next several days is I am going to be posting an interview that I did. First interview I've done in a while. I've got the Skype set up now working on my computer, and I can record, and I'm hoping that this will allow me to do more of these in the future. And I did an interview this weekend with Matthew of Botchamania. I know many of you are well aware of what Botchamania is. It's awesome, in a word. You've seen the Botchamania videos. You've heard of it. A lot of wrestlers even are big Botchamania fans. So I talked to Matthew. We had a great conversation over half an hour, and we're going to get that interview up on the official Sound Off YouTube channel this week. I don't know exactly what date that will be. Probably earlier rather than later in the week, but I don't have an exact day. So just follow along on Twitter and Facebook. I'll keep you guys up to date. And just subscribe to the channel. As soon as it goes up, you know, boom, you'll get a notification. But that's very cool stuff. I'm very happy I was able to talk to him. And like I said, it's a fun conversation. We talk more than just the Botchamania videos. We talk about that, of course, but we also talk about wrestling right now, among other things, and the WWE Network and the possibility of a Botchamania-type show being on the network. I know they have some short clips of, I guess botch isn't a word, but also a lot of bad gimmicks and stuff like that. But could an actual, let's say, half an hour long show dedicated to some of the worst of pro wrestling in terms of botches and fuck-ups and that sort of thing actually make it to the network at some point? They were already doing something similar on YouTube. So we talk about that. So definitely check out the YouTube channel for my interview this week with Matthew. Want to lead off here this week with some, I guess you can call it breaking news. There was a report that is being credited to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer. I guess he brought this up on one of his audio podcasts on Saturday night, early Sunday morning, that he has heard from a reliable source, he claims, that CM Punk is 100% coming back to WWE, and he will be on Raw this week in Chicago. Now, by the time many of you listen to the show, it probably will be after Raw. You will know whether Punk is back or not. I take this with a grain of salt until I hear it, or I should say I see it myself on television. Meltzer, more often than not, is a very reliable source. I have a lot of respect for what he does, but color me skeptical. I don't know, you know, what to believe at this point where Punk is concerned, but it sounds like he's pretty firm that he heard from somebody pretty close to the situation that he will be there. He will be in Chicago. I don't know if this is a recent deal potentially that they came to, or if they came to 1 week ago and it's only leaking out now, and maybe it's all bullshit and it doesn't happen. I still am very skeptical that Punk is going to be on that show this week, but we're going to find out pretty quickly. We won't have to wait very long to find out. And the belief is that if Punk is back, it probably will not be for a match with Triple H, which was the original plan for WrestleMania, but it could very well mean that Punk gets himself inserted into the Randy Orton-Batista match at WrestleMania, and it could become a triple threat for the World Heavyweight Championship. It also would kind of make sense if you go back, and I'm going to talk about SmackDown because I did watch the Batista interview segment. Basically, the Batista heel turn is what it was on Friday night. And he had a line in that promo that I thought was in reference to Daniel Bryan, and I guess it could be, but if Punk is back, it would make more sense that he was referring to Punk in a very subtle way. Batista had this line where he said, basically, where are all the real men? And I look around and all I see are these 195-pound wannabes. And that could very well be in reference to CM Punk, and that could be the kind of a little thing there, a little shot built in to make sense for when Punk comes back. And he can take Dave to task for it and says, hey, you know, here's a 195-pound wannabe that's going to kick your ass. And that could be how things kick off for WrestleMania. So we're going to find out in very short order what the deal is, because if Punk is not on Raw this week in Chicago, I firmly believe he ain't coming back before WrestleMania. This is it. This show will determine whether Punk is back or not. And, you know, Meltzer's claiming he is. I'm still skeptical. We'll find out. You know, look, if he comes back, great. It'll be great to have him back. I know a lot of people are CM Punk fans. They want him to be on the card. They bought their ticket to WrestleMania. I bought my ticket. I don't care if he's on the show or not, because I think it'll be fine without him. But if he's on the show, even better. You know, he stole the show last year with Undertaker. If you take that match out of WrestleMania 29, it's not a good show last year, so it'll be cool if he's back. But I got to say this, and this doesn't change my mind on what I'm going to talk about here. I want to talk about this Chicago Raw Crowd Twitter account that was set up. It'd be kind of funny if CM Punk is the guy behind it. Yeah, there's a Twitter account that is dedicated to this week's Chicago crowd that's going to be at Raw at the Allstate Arena. And I think a lot of us kind of figured, look, you know, when they come to Chicago, whether Punk is there, and especially if Punk is not there, the crowd is going to chant his name all night long. The Chicago crowd normally is very loud anyway and very boisterous, and with some of the crowds we've had recently trying to hijack the show, it's entirely possible the same thing will happen in Chicago. And they'll chant Punk, and maybe they'll chant Bryan, and it's going to be fun to watch on television. It'll probably be fun to be there in the building. I don't know how it may affect the show, but this Twitter account was set up like a week ago, however long it was, and it's already got like 5,000 or 6,000 followers. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to rally everybody who's going to be in the building on Raw this week, rally them to action, to chant for CM Punk and We Want Punk, and I guess also chant for Bryan and others as well. But I took the time, unlike other hosts who maybe don't do their homework. I do my research, and I went on the Twitter account, and I went through all the tweets to make sure I kind of had a good sense of exactly what they're trying to accomplish and what they're looking to do, and it's pretty much what I expected. It is mostly about Punk, and it makes me laugh about the "We Want Punk," "Bring Back Punk," "CM Punk," and all this kind of stuff, because here's a guy in CM Punk who chose to leave on his own, whatever his reasons were. Nobody knows what his real reasons were. You could speculate all day long, and there's been a lot of that, and it could be any number of things. He's hurt, he's just burned out, he doesn't want to wrestle Triple H or WrestleMania. Supposedly there may have even been money that's owed to him, and maybe he feels screwed out of that. Who the hell knows? He hasn't tweeted, he hasn't said a thing since January when he left. So whatever his reasons were, he left. He took his bag at the building that night, he packed up and he went home. And he hasn't been seen since, and he hasn't been heard from since, unless maybe now they've reached a deal. We'll see. But it was his decision to leave, and it was a fucked up decision to just kind of walk out the way that he did. I talk about it in the video, if you go on YouTube, when I talk about the Jim Ross show, and Jim Ross talks about CM Punk, and he agrees with what I said. I said the same thing on my show a few weeks ago. He agrees that, you know, you have a commitment, you have a contract, you have to honor it. Now, that's coming from a guy who used to work in talent relations, so maybe he sees things a little bit differently, because if he were still in charge of talent relations, he'd have a big headache on his hands if this guy just up and left. So I understand completely where JR's coming from. You know, he understands that Punk's burned out, and he thinks it was poor on WWE's part not to recognize that and try to take care of it before this ever happened. But you got a commitment, you got to stick to it. You got a contract, honor it. And when you're done, you can go do whatever the hell you want to. You can ride your bike, you can go read your comic books, you can go to Wizard World, you can watch The Walking Dead and do whatever the hell you want to do. But you got a contract, you got to finish it out. You signed the deal. And now you honor it. And I agree with him. And you can hear more about that in the JR video. But it's just comical to me. What are you chanting, you know, bring back Punk, we want Punk? If you want to chant, we want Punk, then go find his apartment in Chicago and stand outside his apartment and chant, we want Punk. And at some point, he'll open his window and he'll probably tell you to go fuck off, you know? But you probably would be more fruitful, I think, if you did that. Now, if you want to go to the building and chant for Daniel Bryan, you want to chant for Roman Reigns, you want to chant, you know, you want to boo Tista and you want to boo Triple H and you're tired of the authority and you're tired of Randy Orton and John Cena, great. Great. I said that after the Royal Rumble. I encourage it. I encourage fan participation. If people want to go and chant, they paid their ticket. As long as you're not throwing trash at the ring and being stupid, then go ahead and do it. But you set up a Twitter account, and you're going to try to, like, hijack the show in such a way where, you know, let's all get organized and chant for Punk and let's make our voices heard, and they're going to have to bring him back. It's not their decision to make. Believe me, I'm sure they would have wanted Punk back 3 weeks ago. Nobody wants Punk back more than they do, and maybe they got him now. But it was his decision. He walked out. It was his choice. You could chant for him, but this whole notion, this whole Twitter account is so stupid. The whole thing is so stupid. And now, like on Raw this week, we have the big rematch between The Shield and the Wyatt family, which I am very excited about. I'm looking forward more to that than anything else on the show this Monday, whether Punk comes back or not. That's what I'm looking forward to. And those six guys, especially Reigns and Bray Wyatt and Harper and really all of them now that I think about it, even Eric Rowan, maybe I'd put Rowan at the very bottom in terms of who I see breaking out and becoming like a top star. But even Rowan, you know, he's gotten better and who knows? Maybe one day, right? Maybe one day. All six of those guys are the future of that company. They had the best match all year in WWE at the Royal Rumble. I'm going to talk about that at the Elimination Chamber. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Awesome stuff. Just a fucking awesome match. And they're not going to do it at WrestleMania. That kind of sucks. So they're going to do it this Monday in Chicago. You know what? Great. No arguments for me. I look forward to it. I worry, though, that this whole, we want Punk, CM Punk, we're not going to chant for anybody but Punk and Bryan. And, like, you have a match this week. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misreading this, and the people who are running that Twitter account and supporting it love that match, and they treat this Shield Wyatt's match the way it should be treated, and they cheer for these guys, and you know they chant, this is awesome, and all that kind of stuff. But if not, if the goal here is just to boo anything and everything that isn't Punk and maybe Bryan, it's complete bullshit to me, because this is what you should want. This is what a lot of people have been wanting and have been chanting for now for weeks and for months. We're tired of the same old guys. We want the new guys. We want new people on top. We want fresh blood. You got it. You got it in that match, and you're going to get it this Monday. So I hope that it's treated the right way. You know, fan chants for these guys should be encouraged, because we want to see more of the Shield. We want to see more of the Wyatts. We want to see more of these guys coming up from NXT. Guys that actually, you know, can go out there and can put on a kick-ass match, and it's not the same old shit over and over again. And the other aspect of it is this. What we've seen over the last month or so with all these rowdy crowds, seems like we're getting them more often, right? They're chanting, they're tired, they're booing people they shouldn't be booing, they're going against the grain. It's been organic, right? There's been no organized movement here. And they go from city to city. It doesn't have to be a hot city like New York or LA or Chicago. They've gone to other places. It could be fucking Des Moines, Iowa. And you're getting fans who are chanting for Daniel Bryan. They're chanting for Roman Reigns. They're booing Batista. We want Ziggler. It's an organic thing. And what I don't like about this is that this whole thing is getting so big, and we're going to organize it, and we have this manifesto. They're like a cult. You know, it's like they're acting like some kind of like extremist rebel group here. And WWE is obviously well aware of this. They're aware of the Twitter account. They're aware that there's going to be chants. They know what's going on. They're not stupid. And it's not organic anymore. All of a sudden, it's become this organized thing where our intent is just to go and disrupt every single show, no matter what, until you give us what you want. Well, what is it exactly that you want? What if Punk comes back on Monday? What then? Like, what exactly is the goal here? And I like how they can go from city to city, and it's a mix of, you know, internet fans, smart fans, with just regular fans who are all chanting for these guys that they want to see, and I think it's great. And I think WWE is starting to take notice of that. But when you have something like this, it's organized, and you know, you're just trying to get yourselves over, and you're going to disrupt no matter what. Let's chant, we want Punk, this is what we want, and all WWE is going to do is be like, fuck these guys. If anything, that we're going to do the opposite of what you want out of spite, because this is not organic. This is a bunch of guys who are getting together and they're just trying to cause mischief. And nothing is going to change here. It was better when it was organic and it just happened naturally. It's not organic anymore when you have something like this. You know, and nothing is going to be accomplished by doing this. So I just think the whole notion of this is really dumb. It's stupid. And I hope Punk does come back, just so, you know, that'll shut them up and he'll be back and we can move on with our lives. And hopefully he doesn't get ticked off again at some point. You know, if somebody looks at him the wrong way and he goes running back home to Chicago, hopefully he'll be happy enough to actually stick around this time and do his job. What a novel concept that is. Let's talk about the WWE Network. I've gotten a lot of questions from you guys. You want to know my thoughts. You have other specific questions about network-related issues. I know a lot of people had problems streaming, live streaming, the on-demand content. So let's just go through this step by step here. First of all, let me just give my initial thoughts. I love the WWE Network. I think it's great. So far, I think, you know, again, the thing to keep in mind here is that these things take time to work themselves out. I don't know that anybody really expected on day one or week one that every kink was going to be worked out, every little thing was going to work, and nobody gets more riled up than I do when shit doesn't work. There's nothing that pisses me off more, especially when you're paying for something and it doesn't work. So I get that. I get the frustration. I felt that frustration myself while I was watching the NXT special on Thursday. Everything was going great. It's the last 20 minutes of the show. The main event ladder match is about to start, and the live feed crapped out. And up to that point, I had no problems at all with the live feed. It was the on-demand stuff on my Roku that was giving me issues. So believe me, I feel your frustration, but it's the first week. Give it time. Give it time. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a few more weeks to get a lot of those kinks worked out. So far, I really, really like the network. And again, if I were 10 years old again coming up, this would be, you know, a dream come true. And as it is, it's a really cool thing for me as a wrestling fan, even though I'm a lot older than I was. I'm not 10 years old anymore. I know a lot of people with Xbox had and possibly still are having issues. I don't know if it's been resolved yet. I don't think it has. I've been getting a lot of the same alerts that you guys probably have straight from WWE. They've been sending updates. They issued an alert on Friday for Xbox users that said, thank you for signing up. We are working aggressively to address the login issue for Xbox users and expect it to be resolved by this Monday, March 3rd, if not sooner. So they're giving out specific dates, which is dangerous to do because if you can't back it up, I don't know why you would give specific days. They seem to be pretty confident that the Xbox stuff is going to be worked out early this week. So if you're an Xbox user, you can post on our Facebook page or email me and just let me know if things have worked out for you. But yeah, I know Xbox especially have had a lot of frustrations this week. Apple TV, I haven't really heard from anybody who's had issues with Apple TV. I'm not saying there haven't been people, I just haven't heard directly from anybody. The bigger issue is that the network was not supposed to be available to international users until later this year, early next year. That includes Canada, that includes the UK, among other places. And that was not the case, and there are actually a decent number of people who live, for example, in the UK who have access, as we speak, to the WWE network through various means, primarily VPN services. One in particular that I've heard a lot about is this Ola Unblocker. A lot of people swear by it. They say it works. It's great. I know nothing of this, so don't ask me questions about VPN services or Ola Unblocker or any of these things, because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You can go on our Facebook page. We have a great discussion group. There's a million different ways that you can find information and talk to other people who also have the network and probably live in the same region that you do. But that's how people internationally are able to watch this thing. I know on Apple TV, they removed the WWE network icon up in Canada. It was up for a while, and now it's not. But there are ways around it if you search around. Like I said, the VPN services seem to be the way to go if you want to get the network. For now, instead of waiting a year, you can. And Neil, one of our listeners who's actually up on Facebook, posted about something called ZenMate. I guess it's a Chrome extension that he found that seems to work even better than Ola Unblocker if that doesn't work out for you. So again, it's called ZenMate. Just Google or go on our Facebook page. I mean, if you really want to know, you'll find the information. It's out there. But to go back to a lot of the issues I know you guys are having, I know it's frustrating, and I know you want everything to work 100% well on day one, and WWE is not helping because I've heard a lot of horror stories about people who call and talk to their tech support, and I don't know where those people are based. I don't know if they've, you know, from a third-party company that they brought in to handle that. I haven't had to call them myself. If I had to call, I still wouldn't call because that would just drive me up a wall. I'd rather just let the problem settle or just try to figure it out on my own. But the way my advice to you is this. Look at it as a work in progress until WrestleMania. If WrestleMania comes and they have big problems, then absolutely people have the right to complain. They have the right to ask for a refund for that month or be credited with a month of service, okay? Because WrestleMania is the big selling point of this network for a lot of people. Being able to get it for $9.99 essentially instead of the usual $50 or $60. So absolutely. You know, they've got another 5 weeks or so to prepare for the onslaught they're going to have to deal with the number of people who are going to want to watch WrestleMania on this stream. Honestly, if you want my advice, if you plan on watching WrestleMania this year and you have a WWE Network subscription, buy it on traditional pay-per-view anyway. If you're that worried about the stream cutting out or buffering, it's the only option. If I weren't going to New Orleans for WrestleMania, I'd probably do the same thing. I would just say, all right, you know what? I'll get together at my friend's place, we'll split the cost, and we'll buy the pay-per-view the traditional way. Just pay full price for it and hope that going forward they all get, you know, they get all the kinks worked out. And for the pay-per-view in May and the pay-per-view in June and WrestleMania next year, it won't be an issue. But if you're that concerned, oh, you know, WrestleMania better not cut out on me, you know, I'm going to freak out if that happens, order it. I'm telling you right now, order the full version on traditional pay-per-view. Pay the full price, watch it that way, because I guarantee there's going to be problems. I don't know how big the problems are going to be. Maybe they can mitigate them and it's not so bad. I guarantee there are going to be issues with that WrestleMania stream. There is no way, I've seen no evidence so far, that they are going to be able to support that level of traffic that they are going to get. I mean, they couldn't even do it with the NXT special. Now, like I said, they got 5 weeks to work this out. That's not really that long. If they can't really figure out what the problem is, 5 weeks seems like a long time. It's really not. I guarantee you there's going to be issues. Now, maybe you won't be one of the people affected by it, but if you don't want to take that chance, it's not such a crazy idea to just order one more pay-per-view. You're still getting all the other content with the network. You're going to get all the other pay-per-views. That would be my advice to you. And if you don't do that, and you go and you rely on the stream anyway, and it cuts out on you, or you can't get on, and there's nothing but problems, don't say I didn't tell you so. Got plenty of heads up on this. You know there's going to be problems. And if you don't care, then it's not a big deal. Or if you're not going to watch WrestleMania, then it's not a big deal. But I bet most people listening to this are going to watch WrestleMania. And if you don't want that to be a bad night for you, I'm just saying, plan to order it on traditional pay-per-view. Do that for one more show, just to make sure. And after that, hopefully everything will be worked out. Some other observations here from the network. I know I was watching some of the WrestleMania Rewind special. They were covering the first WrestleMania, Hogan, Mr. T against Piper and Orndorff. It was actually really good. I enjoyed it. I noticed the voiceover guy for the show sounded an awful lot like Pat Summerall from the NFL, and in fact, that's exactly who it was, which tells you how long some of these shows must have been sitting in the can for, probably at least 2 years, because Pat Summerall died last year. He died in April, and so that show has pretty much been on ice for a while. It was also very weird to see Bill Apter interviewed on the network. He was interviewed as part of that special. He's also written some columns on WWE.com recently, so he must have a decent relationship with them now. I was watching some old ECW hardcore TV that I didn't even watch when I was younger. So I'm watching a lot of this Eastern Championship Wrestling stuff, you know, with Paul Heyman on commentary with Joey Styles. I'm watching this for the first time, like I'm sure many of you are. But I do remember back in the day, ECW Hardcore TV around 98 or so would air locally here in New York on the MSG network at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was kind of cool to be able to recreate that. I was watching some of the ECW at like 1:30 a.m. And it felt like old times, because I did check out some of the shows later on when they were on at 3 a.m. Not too often, obviously, but it kind of took me back, you know, to a different era. The other thing I noticed is that in between a lot of the shows, they air things like WWE Inbox, which is one of their YouTube shows where they interview a wrestler, fans get to ask questions. They've been showing clips of some of the worst gimmicks and botches in wrestling. They were making fun of the Shockmaster, and they aired the old vignette of the Playboy Buddy Rose blowaway diet. They don't give any context to any of this stuff. Especially the Playboy Buddy Rose thing. I could see a newer fan who watches this and goes, what the fuck is this? Because there's no context given. It's literally just the old vignette. You see this big fat dude, which is what he was by the end of his run. Buddy Rose wasn't always big and fat like that, people. He actually was one of the... I don't want to say he was one of the best of all time, but he's way up there. He doesn't get enough credit for that. But they're airing this stuff with no context, and I think it would be kind of cool if they actually turned it into a full-blown show. But it's still very cool for me to see these things being thrown in there, and I think the reason that we're seeing that, it's not a long-term thing. The long-term goal is to have advertising, a little bit of advertising, or some kind of sponsorship on the network that's going to fill the gap between the shows. They just don't have that yet. So enjoy those things while it lasts, because 6 months from now or a year from now, you're probably going to have ads and commercials. I don't think it's ever going to have as many commercials as you would find on a traditional cable network, but believe me, at some point commercials are coming, and the commercials are going to fill the gaps between these shows. The pay-per-views going up, I've been asked a lot about that. Elimination Chamber is not going up until March, I think March 24th or March 25th. It's going to be whatever the 30 days is. And that was just to prevent people from not ordering the pay-per-view and just waiting, you know, to see it the next day on the network. They weren't going to allow that. But from what I read, it also is an issue of the Royal Rumble not going up right away, or them having to wait 30 days. I think the Rumble may be up now. And them having to wait 30 days for the Chamber has more to do with previous contracts, you know, existing contracts that they have with some of these providers. Starting with WrestleMania 30, these pay-per-views will go up right after they end. Now, I don't know if that means literally 5 minutes after the pay-per-view ends, the on-demand is up, or if you have to wait until the next day. It could be the next day. But you will not have this issue starting with WrestleMania and beyond. The pay-per-views, you will not have to wait 30 days. They will go up right away, as soon as the event ends, effective with WrestleMania 30. Raw and SmackDown are staying, obviously, on USA or whatever network. They're not moving those shows to the network. The replays are staying on Hulu Plus. So the 90-minute versions of Raw that some of you watch, that's staying. They have a contract with Hulu, at least for now. And unfortunately, and I think this is too bad, the replays for Raw and SmackDown on the network, they will air them, but they're going to wait 30 days. So if you're hoping to see a replay of Raw the next day on the network, not going to happen. You can see the edited down, abbreviated version on Hulu. You got to wait 30 days and then it'll be on there. They've got some classic Raw episodes up. It's very scattershot the way they've done this. I think the first like 8 episodes of Raw from 1993 are up. Actually, I don't know if the first one is up, but a lot of the early ones from 93 are up. They have 2 Raw shows from 1998, the one with the Steve Austin Mike Tyson confrontation, and one of my favorite Raw moments of all time. The other show has the Zamboni incident where Austin drove the Zamboni down to the ring. He attacked McMahon. Austin got arrested. They come back. Vince is still in the ring with the red carpeting on the floor because, you know, I don't want to get into this too much. But anyway, Undertaker and Kane beat the shit out of Vince. That whole, those two segments back-to-back is some of the best television they've ever done. And if it was Russo, then he deserves a lot of credit. I don't know who conceived that exact idea. I mean, Austin drove a lot of different vehicles, so I don't know who gets credit for that. You know, the Lincoln Continental and the beer truck. I mean, the Zamboni was just another one. Those are the only 2 Raw episodes from 98 that are up. So like I said, very scattershot. They have the original SmackDown from 1999, not the pilot, the actual first episode where Shawn Michaels turned on The Rock and basically turned heel. So that's up. They have some Madison Square Garden shows that are up. From what I read, they want to put all of them up, all of the Madison Square Garden house shows from the 70s and the 80s and maybe even the 90s that were recorded for TV. They may be going up at some point. Right now they only have like 5 of them. They have about 3 or 4 of the old Legends of Wrestling roundtables from WWE Classics on Demand that I used to rave about, and a lot of you guys did not have access to the service, so if you never saw one of these Legends roundtables, they're awesome. They're great, and I hope they do more of them. I know Jim Ross isn't with the company anymore. They brought him in to do some voiceovers or to offer some comments, I think, for the Paul Heyman DVD that they're working on, so I'm hopeful that maybe they would bring or they would invite JR back, because JR was great on those shows. So if you want to see, those are up. Apparently, one of the issues with things being as scattershot as it is that they did not want to put a lot of content on the network in the first week because a lot of people signed up for that free trial. And I know a lot of you got billed for that free trial. You didn't actually get billed, by the way. From what I understand, even if a charge is on your credit card or your PayPal, you weren't actually billed. It's more of like a holding charge. So just something to be aware of. But it sounds like they're planning on getting up a lot more content starting this week and then the week after that and the week after that. They may actually be adding every single episode of Saturday Night's Main Event and every WCW Clash of the Champions. I don't know how soon that's going to happen. Maybe as early as this week. They're planning on getting all of them up. So there's going to be a lot more content on the network going forward. Like I said earlier, it's the first week. There were going to be kinks. They weren't going to put everything on there at once. And the people complaining and saying, oh, I'm going to cancel, this is not what I expected. Look, I will say this, and this is the next thing I want to get into here. WWE made it very clear at the presentation in Vegas and in the literature, and I think even in the FAQ section, but especially in Vegas, they said, this is the words they used. They used words like unedited, uncut. Now, I knew stuff like Jacqueline at that UK pay-per-view, having her top ripped off with her boobies hanging out, okay? I was pretty sure that was going to be edited. The Cat, Stacy Carter, when she took her top off at that Armageddon pay-per-view, might have been when she won the championship, and she flashed the world. She showed her tits and she flashed the world. I figured, okay, that's going to be edited too. Nudity kind of is crossing a line. I'm fine if they want to edit that. I've already seen it, so hey. But that I expected that. But they have gone completely in the opposite direction here. And they said one thing, and they're clearly doing another here. And I want to go through a list of different edits that people have noted. These are edits that I've noticed. These are edits that some of you guys have noticed. Edits that I've read elsewhere from people who have had way more time than I have to go through all of the different stuff on the network and the pay-per-views and everything else. Now, there were music edits. We expected that there would be music edits because, for example, Enter Sandman by Metallica. They don't have the rights to that. So Enter Sandman does not play when Sandman comes out. However, we had one of our listeners, Juan, who wrote in to say that they have a Metallica song as part of the No Mercy pay-per-view in 2008. But yet they dub over it another song at SummerSlam in 03. So there's no rhyme or reason to why some music is allowed by some artists, and by that same artist, another song is not allowed. Maybe, you know, it is an issue of ownership. It could very well be. I'm sure there's a reason for it. They haven't told us what that reason is. So when you guys are browsing around and when I'm browsing around, it just doesn't make any sense. There were pay-per-views that were missing, although I think pretty much all the pay-per-views are there now. But just to give you a sense of some of these other ones, you know, for example, Bash at the Beach, 1996, WCW. The version that they have up on the network is the home video release, as opposed to the master copy that aired at the time. So when the NWO did their whole big thing at the end, and Hogan turned heel, and there's trash being thrown, there was a fan run-in. There was some fat guy, I think, who tried to run into the ring, and if I remember, I think Scott Hall, like, stomped his head or something like that. That is not in the version of Bash at the Beach that's on the network. That fan run-in has been cut. It's not in there. WCW Halloween Havoc, 1990. It's the Turner Home Entertainment version. It's not the master copy. So the pay-per-view is 3 hours long, but the version on the network is 2 hours. So clearly there are matches, whole matches, that are missing from that pay-per-view. There were pay-per-views from WWE in terms of, you know, King of the Rings and SummerSlams and stuff like that that are Coliseum video releases, which is fine. If anything, the Coliseum video releases, I think, had some, like, bonus exclusive content. So that's actually a good thing. New Jack. I had a lot of you guys write into me, and then I saw posted online that apparently New Jack is not even featured on the network. on all the ECW pay-per-views, I don't know about the TV shows, but on all the pay-per-views, he was edited out of them. And maybe there was an exception. Somebody wrote in that one of the Living Dangerously pay-per-views, he's actually in there. But otherwise, he's missing. So what the hell's that about? That makes absolutely no sense to me. You're taking a person who was a pretty big star in ECW, and you're removing him from all of these different shows that you promised would be uncut. There's another ECW pay-per-view. I think it was one of the Hardcore Heavens, maybe 97, where there was a lot of obscenities being, you know, said by the crowd, and people were putting their middle fingers up. Apparently, that's also been edited off. SummerSlam 1991, they had the Macho Man Elizabeth wedding. And I love the music they had for the video that they showed. They had that song Together, right? That's iconic. I can't not think of that pay-per-view and that wedding and that whole angle without thinking of that song. And that was a song that they did. They brought people in. That was in-house. That was their own music. That's not on the pay-per-view on the network. They removed that whole song, which, if I remember, I think that was written by Jim Johnston, who's the guy that does all the WWE theme music. They dubbed over it. What the hell's that about? So, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal, but it goes to a bigger issue here, which is you tell people, one of the selling points is that you're going to get this content, you're going to get these pay-per-views uncut and unedited. And I understand the nudity. I have no problem with them putting a blur over their chest or whatever. But when it comes to this other stuff, they better explain what the hell's going on here, because, I mean, that's just false advertising. And you're just begging for people to be let down and to be disappointed and to bitch and moan, which is exactly what they're doing. And in terms of the edits, I agree with them 100%. They really need to explain themselves, because it was wrong. It was wrong to tell people, listen, we're not going to edit this stuff. It's going to be in its original format as you remember it, and then it's not. Clearly it's not. And there's a million other examples. If you go around online, I'm only scratching the surface here. That's fucked up, I will admit. But all of that aside, my impressions, my first week impressions of the network are very positive. I think it's really, really good. I love it. It's only going to get better. It's a work in progress. You got to give it time. And for $9.99 in the end, it's going to more than pay for itself. So for me personally, I give it a thumbs up on week one. And I'm optimistic that week two will be better and week three will be better and so on and so forth. And I think it's well worth it. I think, again, for the price point, even if it's not perfect, it's still worth it. The Elimination Chamber pay-per-view was last weekend. I don't really have too much new to say about it. I was tweeting about it. Overall, not what I would call a great show, but it was carried largely by the two main event matches. So in that respect, I guess it was a success. The two matches that pay-per-view was sold on were the Elimination Chamber championship match, which was won by Randy Orton. Very anticlimactic finish. It's like, oh God, you know, here we go. Interference in the cage. I could tell you I was watching the pay-per-view for the second month in a row with my friend and his wife, two casual fans at best. And they were enjoying the pay-per-view up until the point that Kane and the Wyatts even. When the lights went out, lights came back on, the Wyatts were in the cage. They hated that. They hated it because to them, it went against the whole concept of the match. You know, it's a cage match at its core. That's what the chamber is. And they're like, they were rolling their eyes. They almost wanted to turn the pay-per-view off at that point. They were so taken out of it because it's like, oh, you know, we have interference in a cage match, really? And I explained to him, I said, dude, there's been interference in cage matches for 15 years now. But they didn't want to hear it. They were really, it almost ruined the whole match for them. And then when Kane was in there and Kane gets involved, it was a huge turnoff for them. And I can understand why. It was a pretty shitty finish in that way. But overall, the match was still really good. I didn't think it was anything close to being the best chamber match they've ever had. I see a lot of love for that chamber match. It was good. I wouldn't go beyond that, though. I've seen chamber matches that are far better than that one. But the big match on the show for me, the real main event, in my opinion, was The Shield and the Wyatt family. And, I mean, come on. I mean, what more is there to say? These guys are out there, and they haven't even touched. I don't even think the Wyatts were in the ring yet, and the fans are chanting, "This is awesome." I've never seen that before. So these people were completely into the story. They were completely into these six guys. They wanted to see these six guys go out there and beat the shit out of each other, which is what wrestling should be. It shouldn't be about bad comedy and flatulence and giving birth to hands and dance contests and bad promos and all the bullshit that they spoon-feed us sometimes. Buried in there every now and then is a gem, like the one we got last Sunday, which was awesome. I loved everything about this match. I thought the match itself was great. I thought the fan reaction made the match even better. I thought everybody played their role perfectly. They had the right amount of high spots. I don't remember all of them. I remember the Wyatts putting Seth Rollins through the announce table. I remember Dean Ambrose disappearing, seemingly being kidnapped. God knows where he ended up. And then at the end of the match, the way they handled that with Roman Reigns being surrounded by all the members, he stands up to them. If he's going to go down fighting, he's going to go down in a blaze of glory. And he almost is able to fight it off. You know, Bray Wyatt goes for Sister Abigail, and Reigns fights him off. And, of course, in the end, the Wyatt family won. I was surprised, if anything, that Reigns is the one who took the fall in that match. It's not like he lost anything from it, but they had to put Bray Wyatt over strong. He's wrestling John Cena at WrestleMania. John Cena is the guy. It is to be expected. I didn't expect an outcome that was any different. In fact, all my predictions last week on the show were correct. Another clean sweep. Not that I'm, you know, gloating or anything. But I think the outcomes of these matches were fairly obvious. You didn't have to be a genius to figure out who was going to win a lot of these key matches. I guess the tag match could have gone differently. The Usos could have won the belts. I just didn't feel like they were. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn lost singles matches on TV leading up to the pay-per-view. That was a dead giveaway right there that they were probably going over. And I figure it'll mean more if they save that title win for WrestleMania. I don't know if they've announced a match between them on Raw this Monday. I think they have. I don't know if it's for the titles. I guess they could switch the titles in Chicago this week. But if not, I would definitely just save it for WrestleMania and give the Usos their big moment. You could do a three-way match or a four-way match, put the Rhodes brothers in there, and let the Usos shine and have their big moment in front of a big crowd. And you can film it for Total Divas, and believe me, there's a lot of different reasons that you can have the Usos win the belts of Mania, and it probably makes more sense to do it there. Batista and Del Rio, it died a death. Nobody cared. They were cheering Del Rio. They were booing Batista. We had Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. Nobody cared. We had the women's match, which was awful. It was horrendous. It was terrible. It was just an absolute wretched match between AJ and Cameron. And I'm not blaming AJ. Let's put it that way. Cameron is not ready for that spot. We know why Cameron is in the spot, because Naomi got hurt. And hopefully Naomi will be back before WrestleMania and she'll get her match with AJ, because I feel bad for her. Cameron has no business being in there in a singles match. She may get better. She was not good on this pay-per-view. This was bad. And the outcome was worse, because Tamina interfered. It was just, I don't know, it looked very clunky. Didn't really understand what the hell was going on here. It almost looked like they were maybe starting something between AJ and Tamina. Maybe that's the backup plan. If Naomi can't come back, they could do AJ and Tamina for the title of WrestleMania. But this was really bad. And Big E and Jack Swagger, that's the other thing I wanted to mention. They actually had a really good match. They opened the show. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was. And the fans were into it. The most I've ever heard fans being into a Jack Swagger match is as long as I can possibly remember. I'm going back in my mind here, and I can't remember the last time a crowd was that into a Jack Swagger match. Big E went over. I figured he would. And so that was the pay-per-view. Not much else to really say about it. Raw last week was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We'll go through the good, the bad, and the ugly here. Some random observations. This was the first Raw of the network era. So they had the pre-show on the network at 7:30 Eastern. I liked the pre-show. The way they did it, it was live in the arena. They had Josh Matthews. It was Josh. It was Booker T, Alex Riley, and Ric Flair. Quite the eclectic crew. And every now and then they would cut back into live action because they were taping a match for Superstars. They were taping Superstars before Raw. So they would cut into a match between Kofi Kingston and Damian Sandow. And in fact, they cut in, they actually aired the finish, which if I was an avid watcher of Superstars, which I am not, I'd have been pissed that they spoiled the finish. But they showed that. And then afterwards, Jerry Lawler interviewed Kofi Kingston on one of those old school interview platforms. Over by the stage, which was never used again. So I'm not entirely sure what the point of that was. I saw that and I figured it was going to be used by Mean Gene. I thought maybe they were bringing Mean Gene in to interview Hulk Hogan on that old school stage, but nope. That stage was never seen again. Speaking of Hogan, the Hulkster is back, brother. He was back on Raw. I said on Twitter, I think I'm a bigger mark for Hogan's theme music than I was for Hogan even when I was a little kid. Real American is my all-time favorite wrestling theme song. And it's funny, it wasn't even recorded for Hogan. It was meant for the U.S. Express, which was Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda, or Rotundo, I guess, as they were calling him back then. But Windham walked out on the company, and then somehow Hogan ended up with the music. And I can't imagine anybody else coming out to that music, except maybe Patterson and Briscoe. That's a memory from 99 I'd rather block out of my mind. One of our listeners, Brian, said when Hogan walked out, he was looking to see if he was dragging Dixie Carter behind him. Dixie was there in spirit, Brian, right behind Hulk. WWE has stolen their rocket fuel. TNA should file charges against them for stolen property. But Hogan was out there doing a typical Hogan promo. He flubbed one line, no big deal. He did fine. I tell you what, Hulk Hogan was out there. He didn't do much. He was posing. But just the way he was walking down the aisle, he was moving around in the ring, and he was cupping his ear, and he was posing. He was moving around a lot less gingerly than he was the last time I saw him in TNA. Every time he walked out in TNA, he looked like a crippled man. He couldn't even walk to the ring without this weird limp. They wouldn't film him getting into the ring, which, by the way, they did the same thing here on Raw, so that must be a directive from the truck. Do not film Hogan when he gets in the ring. The next time Hulk Hogan is on TV, or even a WrestleMania, pay close attention to that. When Hogan gets to the ring steps to come into the ring, I guarantee you they cut away and they show the announcers or they show the crowd, because they did that in TNA and they did that on Monday night. And I can only imagine because Hogan, when he goes to bend over and go through the ropes, it's a little tough for him, so they don't film that. But aside from that, he was moving around great, all things considered. It's funny, isn't it? It's funny how a little motivation can put an extra pep in your step. So he announced that he's the host for WrestleMania 30, what you're going to do, typical Hogan promo. Alberto Del Rio got a fluke roll-up on Bautista, who was mocking the fans in the crowd every chance he got. You know, if they only had brought back Bautista a year ago, Del Rio's babyface turn may have actually worked. Look, they had no choice but to turn the guy heel. On SmackDown, he came out, he cut a promo. He looked like the biggest douchebag on Mother Earth. He looked like some Guido mobster out there. I don't know what the hell this guy was wearing. It was only Dave Bautista could pull this off, and even so, he looked completely ridiculous. I don't see how anybody can cheer a guy who wears that kind of clothing. But he's out there, and he's basically heeling on the fans, and he's talking about where are all the real men. All we got around here are 195-pound wannabes, which I immediately thought, okay, that's a reference to Daniel Bryan. Maybe they're going to work Bryan into the match at WrestleMania. Now, of course, it turns out maybe he was referring to Punk with that line. Maybe that's why it was scripted. We'll find out. But he's out there, and he's cutting a heel promo. Dolph Ziggler came out to confront him. Apparently, there were tons of We Want Ziggler chants that got edited off the show according to Dolph Ziggler on Twitter. So he clearly doesn't give a shit anymore. He's just going to say whatever he wants because what can they do to him? I see people online, oh, Dolph shouldn't have said that. It's like, why not? What more could they possibly do to this guy other than, I guess, just take him off television completely or fire him? He's got nothing left to lose. The guy can't go much lower than he already is. So I thought that was kind of odd that they would edit them off the show. I don't really see how that takes away from Batista. Batista's getting heel heat, and the babyface comes out and gets cheered. Why would you edit that off the show? Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Ziggler drop-kicked him, so Batista was furious. They wrestled later on. Ziggler got squashed, and so the heel turn is complete. Batista is a heel. Randy Orton is a heel. As of today, we have a heel-versus-heel main event match at WrestleMania 30. Which obviously means that's going to change. Whether it's Punk, whether it's Bryan, something about that match is going to change. There is no chance in hell that match stays the way it is. Heel versus heel, Batista versus Orton. No way. Daniel Bryan confronts the Authority. This is back to Raw now. Daniel Bryan confronts the Authority. He had a match with Kane. He beat Kane fair and square with the knee. Cut a promo on Triple H. Challenged him to a match at WrestleMania 30, which the fans were only half-heartedly, because that's not the match they want to see. Most fans would much rather see Bryan go for the championship. It wasn't this big reaction like, yay, he's going to get his revenge. It's like, oh, okay, sure, why not? And that's not the reaction you want to go for. They want to see Bryan challenging for the title. He's been screwed over so many times, they don't want to drag this out anymore. They want the big payoff, and I don't blame them. So I had somebody ask me, you know, well, if they make it a triple threat and they add Bryan to the match at WrestleMania, and if Punk doesn't come back, then who does Triple H face? And I'll say it again. My answer was, hopefully, a monitor backstage. He doesn't have to wrestle at WrestleMania. If he does, he does. Triple H has had some really good matches at WrestleMania, but he doesn't have to. It shouldn't be an automatic, well, we got to plug Triple H in here somewhere, so let's reshuffle the card. No, if you have a card, if you have an idea of where you want to go, and Triple H doesn't fit into those plans, too damn bad. He doesn't have to be on that show. Let him work the gorilla position in the back. Sheamus beat Christian with a bro kick as Christian was coming off the top rope. Good match, great finish. I'm sick of all the talk on commentary about how ugly Christian is. You would think Vince McMahon vomits backstage at the mere sight of this guy every single week. You know, he's got to carry around like a vomit bag or have somebody carry one around for him. It's like, oh, hey, Vince, Christian's coming. Get ready. You know, I mean, really, what the fuck? Enough already. We had John Cena and the Wyatt family had their little confrontation. John Cena supposedly suffered a knee injury. Which turned out to not be a real knee injury that was planned. It was all part of the storyline. But then, supposedly he has a real injury, a groin strain. I don't know what to believe anymore. He may well have a groin strain, although from what I read, Orton was working on that injury at the house show matches over the weekend. And if the guy has a really bad groin injury, you would think you wouldn't want to target that. So I don't know that Cena's really hurt at all. I think it's all just part of the story. I think it's all BS. And even if he is hurt, it doesn't matter. He'll be fine in 2 weeks. He's Super Cena. His healing powers are amazing and unprecedented, so he'll be fine. We had Bray Wyatt, though, I have to say here, the promo he cut on Cena was really, really good. It was something to the effect of, you're a liar. You know, because Cena is the establishment. And Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family are here to take down the establishment. So that story works. So I like most of Bray Wyatt's promos. I think he's great. Bray Wyatt had a match with Roman Reigns. It was the battle of the future WrestleMania headliners. I give him 3 years to get there. I think Jim Ross on Twitter said two. I say three. And the match wasn't what it should have been. It was very slow in spots. I don't think people were really expecting that. The crowd reaction was nothing like it was the night before when all six guys went at it. In fact, people were trying to entertain themselves here. They were chanting Randy Savage. They were chanting JBL. And that, you know, that did bother me, and I'll tell you why it bothered me. It bothered me because a lot of these fans who chant, I do think they want change. Some of them will just chant because other people are doing it, but I think a lot of people do want change. I think they are tired of the same stuff. They want something different. Please, something has to change. And you're getting it now. These are the guys that are going to lead this company in the future. I don't care if you like Bray Wyatt, if you don't like Roman Reigns. It doesn't matter. These are the guys that have been chosen to take the company in that direction going forward. They're going to be the guys who are going to be on top. Like I said, I think both those guys can be WrestleMania headliners very soon. It's something different. They're young. They're good. It's not like they're being pushed just because their family was in the wrestling business. You know, somebody like Bray Wyatt, I'm sure, got a look because he was IRS's kid. And Roman Reigns got a look because his dad was Sika. Not because he's cousins with The Rock, like that dodo brain wrote in about last week. Actually, it wasn't anybody who wrote into our show. It was some argument that was being made by other people that Roman Reigns is only getting a push because of The Rock. The only Rock is in that person's head. I can't take stuff like that seriously. But these guys are really good. And you're getting a match here between these two guys that you should be enjoying and supporting. And if you don't like it, if you think it's boring, that's fine. But why are you going to chant during this match? Of all the matches, you're going to chant during this one? That didn't really make a lot of sense to me. It got better at the end. We had the Wyatts and the Shield had agreed to leave their other guys in the back. Of course, the Wyatt family came out. Seth Rollins comes from out of nowhere. I don't know where the hell he came from. Out of the crowd, under the ring, I have no idea. He got into the ring and immediately launched himself out of the ring. He did a suicide dive onto Harper and Rowan on the outside. Reigns nailed the Superman punch. He was going to go for the spear. Dean Ambrose ran in. He attacked Bray for the DQ. They didn't really play up tension between the two of them for it. It's not like they were in each other's face, like, hey, you cost me the match. But it was, if anything, it was very subtle. And the Shield stood tall in the end. And now, like I said earlier, this Monday in Chicago, we get the rematch of the century, the Shield against the Wyatts. We're not getting into Mania, so we may as well get it in front of a hot crowd in Chicago on Monday. Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad is the guest star on Raw this Monday. May God be with him. I think of all the nights for him to be there, this is probably not the one. And the main event segment was Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker having their big confrontation. It is, in fact, going to be Undertaker and Brock at WrestleMania, the worst-kept secret in the world. It is not Sting and The Undertaker, so we could put those rumors to bed. I still think Sting's going to come in and maybe at Mania do a cameo, which I think I suggested on the Sound Off a while back. Maybe he can help Undertaker win. Or show up on Raw the next night. He could be the big debut the night after, make an appearance and set something up, you know, for next year. I don't know what they're going to do, but it's Brock and Undertaker. Brock had an open contract. He wanted a championship match at WrestleMania. They weren't going to give it to him, so he was ready to just quit and walk home. And Undertaker's gong hit. He comes out. He looked no less than 1,000 years old. And looked like he had a new tattoo on his neck, too. You'd think he would learn his lesson after the last one. So Brock signed the contract. Undertaker, I don't think, ever really did sign the contract. He stabbed Brock's hand with the pen, then he chokeslammed him through the table. Place was going nuts. People were totally into The Undertaker. And that was it. That's how Raw went off the air. I watched the backstage pass, the post-show. Brock laid in the ring for a long time. He was selling forever. They would cut back to the ring and show him laying there. I wonder if these Raw backstage pass shows are pretty much, you know, spell the end for the traditional post-show dark match. Or if they're just going to move the post-show backstage after a few weeks. Maybe them doing it out in the arena like that is only temporary. Because I would think at some point, you can't do a dark match in the background while the post-show is airing. So they're either going to move it or they're not doing dark matches anymore. And that was it. That was Raw. I enjoyed the show overall. There were a lot of things happening between Hogan being back, Undertaker making his comeback. There was some good wrestling on the show, Sheamus and Christian. There was enough there to like. I can't call it a bad show. It was a good show. And speaking of good shows, that brings us to NXT. NXT Arrival, the big live special Thursday night on the WWE Network. You'll notice I didn't play the usual intro music for NXT. It sounds like that may be no longer the music for the show. They may have changed it to some new theme. I don't know if they're still using that Coheed and Cambria theme, so for now I won't use it. But the pre-show was outdoors. They had Renee Young hosting. Very ESPN College Game Day-like with Renee Young, Bret Hart, Kevin Nash, and Paul Heyman. It should have just been Heyman and Renee, in all honesty, because the other two brought nothing to the table here. More so Kevin Nash, who sounded intoxicated the entire time, like he was drunk off his ass, and looked like he would have rather been anywhere but there. He just clowned around, and he cracked jokes for most of it. But, hey, You know, it's another payday for one of Paul's friends. And I don't mean Paul Heyman. And his second one, in fact. That's Nash's second payday so far this year, between that and his Rumble cameo. Maybe he can get Nash a guest referee gig for his match, Triple H Ken, at WrestleMania. Maybe that's coming up next. So I liked it. It was a great environment. You had a lot of screaming fans in the background, and hopefully they'll do more of these specials in the future, and maybe quarterly or something, and they'll do more of this. I felt this show had, at points, an ECW one-night stand vibe to it. So it wasn't exactly the Hammerstein Ballroom, but there were points where the crowd was boisterous enough and chanting certain things, and they were, yeah, there was like an exchange in the Sami Zayn Antonio Cesaro match. They went back and forth, then they stopped and stared at each other, and everybody cheered. And it reminded me of the same sequence at the beginning of the Lance Storm Chris Jericho match at the first One Night Stand show in 2005. And as soon as those guys were done wrestling, they did like a bunch of hip tosses or arm drags or whatever, everyone just stood up and immediately started clapping out of respect. And that's kind of the same atmosphere and the same vibe I was getting from this show. And that's a positive. That is a compliment, because that ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view, the first one in 05, is one of my all-time favorite WWE-produced pay-per-views. It was so much fun. And I wasn't even a big ECW fan back in the day. You didn't have to be, man. You watched that pay-per-view, it was fun. Wrestling should be fun like that. And this show was fun. Antonio Cesaro and Sami Zayn had an awesome match. I can't really say much more than that. It was a great match. I don't want to compare it to the last one, because the last one was different. It was 2 out of 3 falls. This told a different story. It was just one fall. There was a great spot where Sami Zayn tried to replicate. He tried to leap through the ropes on the outside, like underneath the turnbuckles. He did that spot in their last match. And turned it into a tornado DDT. Well, here, when he went to go diving through the turnbuckles, through the ropes, he got caught with a wicked uppercut by Cesaro that I thought knocked his block off. So that, and that was in the first, like, 3 minutes of the match. So that was awesome. And the story here was that Sami Zayn would not quit. No matter what this guy did to him, he was beating him into oblivion. He would not quit. He would not give up. They did a kick out at one spot later in the match, which I've seen them use on the indies in the past. Haven't really seen that in WWE, but you know, Zayn was getting just his ass handed to him and all these near falls, and all of a sudden, Cesaro did something. Maybe it was the big uppercut. And he went for a pin, and the referee counted one, and Zayn kicked out. And it was almost like he was powering up. So I thought that was pretty cool. I liked the finish to their last match better than this one. But this was still great. After the match, Cesaro went to leave, came back. He teased that he was going to attack Sami Zayn. Instead, the two embraced. Cesaro whispered some sweet nothings in Zayn's ear, and he looked all emotional. So the slow burn babyface turn for Antonio Cesaro continues. Zayn is more than ready for the main event roster, or for the main roster, I should say. And when he makes it up, I hope it's not long before these two find their way into a program together, because they have the opposite of what John Cena and Randy Orton have. Those two, Orton and Cena, together, they go together about as well as Dave Batista's wardrobe. Okay, whereas Zayn and Cesaro go together like peanut butter and jelly. They have great chemistry together. So hopefully this isn't the last we see of them in the ring together. Mojo Rawley beat CJ Parker. My night was nearly ruined when I heard Parker's music playing. Thankfully, this was brief. Rawley won with his seated butt bomb. This was just a showcase for Mojo Rawley. They obviously have big plans for him. They see him as one of their big stars down the road. He's got something, just not in the ring. You know, not yet. The Ascension beat Too Cool, Grandmaster Sexay, and Scotty Too Hottie, or Mr. Clean, as I called him. He's now shaved completely bald. He still had hair on Old School Raw, you know, in January. And now he's got nothing up there now. We got to see the Worm. The Ascension killed Scotty with their Fall of Man finish. One thing I noticed was all the new music on this show. I mentioned that the show opened with a new theme song. The Ascension had new music. Paige had new music. I guess they wanted to freshen things up, so they gave new music to a bunch of people. Paige and Emma. Great video packages to build up to this match. They had individual videos for each woman. Just imagine if they put forth half this effort for the Divas on the main roster. It's amazing. It's at the point where I think NXT is the high point for the women in WWE. It's the opposite of how it is for the main roster with the men. Everyone aspires to be the WWE champion and headline WrestleMania, right, and make big money on the main roster and go there. If I'm a diva, I aspire to be the women's champion and headline a live NXT special on the network. I mean, it's no wonder Natalya spends more time down at NXT than she does on Raw or SmackDown. I don't blame her. I get it now. I understand why. So they gave these girls, it was well over 10 minutes. I'm kicking myself. I should have done the Diva stopwatch. It would have been the longest one I've ever done. I'm pretty sure it went over 10 minutes. And you know what? It was good enough that if they came back with a rematch with some kind of stipulation, maybe no DQ or something like that, I think they could go 15 or 20 minutes and nobody would complain. I don't know how good it would be. I don't know if those girls can go 20 minutes. I'm just saying, the idea of the Divas on the main roster right now going 20 minutes is comical. But the idea that these women could at some point have a rematch with a stip of some kind and go 15 to 20 minutes, I'd be okay with that. I would have nothing bad to say about that at all. Good part of the match was Paige selling pain from a lot of the Emma submission locks. They sure do teach a lot of these guys submissions down in developmental. That's one change I've really noticed. I don't know if that's the MMA influence or what, but I've certainly noticed that. Emma kicked out of the Paige Turner, which is Paige's finishing move. That shocked the hell out of her, and that led to her debuting what I hope is a second finish. I hope it wasn't just a one-and-done type of thing. It's always good to have a few different moves to bust out when it's appropriate. It was Bull Nakano's old Scorpion Cross submission. I admit I did not know the name of the hold, but I definitely recognized it. I still remember seeing photos in the old WWF magazines showing Bull Nakano with a Lundra Blaze locked in that hold, and it looks painful. And it was the exact same move. It's called the Scorpion Cross, which means Paige and Emma now have more devastating-looking finishers than most of the men in WWE. Emma had no choice but to tap, to embrace after the match, very similar to Sami Zayn and Cesaro earlier. I do have to say, William Regal is the man. Seeing William Regal doing the Emma dance made my night. Even when the feed cut out, nothing could ruin my night after I saw William Regal do the Emma dance. That was phenomenal. Backstage after the show, Ric Flair and his daughter Charlotte interrupted a promo by Paige. The two had a stare down. I'm not sure if that's the next direction for Paige or something that's being teased for down the road when Charlotte has more experience, because she absolutely is not ready to be challenging for any title yet, be it in developmental or anywhere else. Tyler Breeze and Xavier Woods, this was where the feed cut out for a lot of people. It was fine for me. I saw this whole thing. There was no match. Alexander Rusev and Lana came out. Rusev destroyed both of them, mostly Woods. He locked him in the Accolade. Yet another submission finisher in NXT. NXT champion Shawn Michaels made an appearance. He came out carrying the NXT title like he used to carry the WWE title. He looked like the NXT champion when he came out. He was very funny. He did some comedy, plugged his Mr. WrestleMania DVD. Then he got serious, talked about knowing a thing or two about ladder matches. Adrian Neville and Bo Dallas made their way out, and this is where my feed cut out, which was maddening, but I went back later that night. I watched the match. It was good. It's a good match. Certainly not the best ladder match I've ever seen. It is developmental, let's be honest. Had this been Pac on the indie scene, right? Adrian Neville in another life doing a ladder match instead of Adrian Neville having one in WWE, I'm sure we would have seen some really crazy things. But Neville got the win with the red arrow. He didn't do it off the ladder, which I thought for sure he would. I'm actually grateful that he didn't, because that would have been scary. But he had Dallas laid across a ladder. Excuse me, came off the top rope with the move, nailed it. Neville climbed the ladder, got the title, big celebration at the end. They show John Cena in the crowd wearing a suit and applauding. And if you pay close attention, you could see former TNA Knockout SoCal Val in the background. I like to think that Cena had his jorts and his neon gear underneath his suit. I think he did. Off the air, he came into the ring to steal the spot, put over Neville on the microphone. And I guess Neville got to celebrate to his music, and that's how the event ended. So aside from the feed cutting out for a lot of people and for myself, and I felt really bad for Neville and for Bo, everything was working so well up until that point. I'm sure they really, like, this is a big night for these guys. And it sounds like most people, not everybody, but most people didn't get to see their match, or they had to go later on and they were pissed off and they were frustrated. And I felt bad for those guys, you know, because they didn't deserve that. But I thought it was a very enjoyable 90 minutes before my feed cut out. And then, like I said, I went back and I watched the main event. I hope they do more of these. Not every month, maybe quarterly, like four per year or something like that would be good. The arena at Full Sail makes for a great atmosphere. But then again, so did the Impact Zone in those early years. And after a while, the people get tired of seeing the same faces over and over. Thing is, with NXT, it's developmental. So in theory, those faces are going to cycle out over time. It's not going to be the same people over and over again. In TNA, that wasn't always the case. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's another way to show your support for The Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/solomonster. Got some breaking TNA news here. TNA superstars are overseas filming for a one-night-only pay-per-view called Outbreak, pitting TNA guys against guys from the Wrestle 1 promotion in Japan. That's the Great Muda's promotion. Great Muda is coming in for lockdown this year. They have a working agreement. And the Bromans, earlier today, here on Sunday, won back the TNA World Tag Team titles. Now, since I recorded last week's show, the Wolves had won the titles from the Bromans at a house show in West Virginia. And so here we are now. I'm recording episode 316, and technically it's like nothing ever changed because the Bromans have the belts back. So they are two-time tag team champions now. And Austin Aries was defeated by Seiya Sanada, who is now the new TNA X Division champion, and he is one of the wrestlers who I think is going to be competing at Lockdown and possibly even maybe even some Impact shows after that. So a pair of title changes over in Japan today. I think that's kind of cool, actually. I think if you're going to do some sort of interpromotional thing, you got to shake things up. And doing something like this is actually, I think, a pretty cool thing. So I just wanted to mention that here right off the bat. Those title changes occurred earlier today. Back to Impact this past Thursday. No Delusional Dixie on the show this week. So that right there is a plus. We learned that the Samoa Joe versus Magnus cage match at Lockdown will be contested according to MVP. Not under Magnus rules, but under Joe rules, which means the match can only end by submission or knockout. Since Cage is a no DQ match anyway, I mean, wouldn't that make this Magnus rules anyway? It seems kind of odd that he would say that. Why not say Magnus rules and Joe rules? I don't know. I thought the editing on this show was horrendous. They aired footage of the Wolves beating the Bromans for the belts at the house show I just mentioned. And they played it up like, you know, hey, you never know what's going to happen when you buy a ticket to a TNA live event. And I like that. I like that aspect of it, even though the only reason they did that was to set up the Japanese stuff they were going to do. But I would like to see more promotions, WWE, TNA, do title changes. As rare as they are now, I'm not saying do them all the time, but it'd be nice to see them more often or do something on these shows where, like, it's a big enough occurrence, something happens, and you got to air footage of it on television. Just remind people, hey, it's not just the one television show that you watch on TV every week. We actually have these live events that come to your town. You should buy a ticket. So I'd like to see that more often as a fan. I just think it makes it, I don't know, it's just a cool way to make those shows feel important. But the problem is this show here was taped before the title change. So they inserted this scene of the Bromans in the back flipping out that they lost the belts, and they had a three-way tag team match with the Bromans, the Wolves, and Bad Influence. and never aired any of the entrances. Nor did they keep the camera on the bromance when they won the match and they left the ring because they were probably parading around with the tag team belts. Couldn't show that because technically they're not the tag team champions anymore. So that looked a bit silly. And what's worse is all of the quick cutaways on this show. I know I've said this before, but it was even worse on this episode here. In multiple segments, they just cut away way too quickly. You know, after the James Storm Gunner segment, at the end of the main event, when Austin Aries turned heel, you'd think that'd be a big deal. And they don't give these things a chance to sink in. I don't even think they showed a replay of the Aries thing. It just comes off so rushed to me. But yeah, the Bromans won the three-way tag match. They earned a spot on Team Dixie at Lockdown. EC3, who I thought was really good on this show, chose Doug Williams as his opponent. And that was a nice surprise for the fans in London. He got a great reaction. Carter beat him in 2 minutes with the 1%. Strong win for EC3. I like that they're not treating him like a total joke anymore. And he's actually getting wins over tough opponents and not scrubs. Yeah, he may not be a big star, but by no means is Doug Williams a scrub. I don't know anybody who would refer to him as a scrub. So that was a big win. James Storm came out to complete his heel turn, cutting a promo on Gunner, who came out. And instead of attacking Storm and kicking his ass for costing him the world championship the week before, he stands there and he listens to what the man has to say. Why? Just kick his ass. He cost you the title. There is nothing this guy could say that's going to make me any less pissed off that you cost me the world championship. So that was dumb. I still thought the segment was good. You know, once they were talking back and forth, yeah, if you were going to do something like that, at least have Storm, you know, go out of the ring or something. Like, don't have them face-to-face like that. But both guys were good. I thought Storm was great. They talked about how he said the whole thing was premeditated. I planned this out from the moment that you stepped over me in that match to win the Feast or Fired briefcase and get the world title shot. And the message here is that there's nothing more important to James Storm than being the world heavyweight champion. You hear that, John Cena? That's what wrestling should be. So Gunner finally did end up attacking Storm. He ran off, and then they abruptly cut away. Magnus introduced Bad Bones, the German wrestler I mentioned last week, who I had no idea who he was. That was when he was in the back being interviewed by Jeremy Borash, and Sam Shaw was kidnapping Christy Hemme in the background. All this crazy, stupid BS. So he challenged Samoa Joe, Magnus did, to come on down and wrestle Bad Bones, which is exactly what Joe did. He came down, and Bad Bones is such a bad dude, he lost in a minute to the Muscle Buster and the Coquina Clutch. So Broken Bones is more like it. Throughout the show, Bobby Roode and MVP each made a pitch to Austin Aries for him to be on their respective teams at Lockdown. Aries countered MVP by saying, "I'm going to be the special referee for your match tonight with Bobby Roode. You got to learn to trust me." And MVP did, which turned out to be a mistake. Then we had the Kurt Angle Hall of Fame induction ceremony in the ring. Jeremy Borash presented Kurt with a Rolex as a gift. That's what you give a guy in your office who's retiring. You give them a watch. And TNA, when you go into the Hall of Fame, I guess that's what you get. You get the same thing. So now, I guess Kurt can count down the hours on his new watch until his contract expires and he can go back to WWE. Kurt actually cut a really good speech here, very emotional, and talked about having addiction problems. And, you know, he didn't want to go into the Hall of Fame all those months ago because he was battling a lot of personal demons and it just didn't feel right. And, you know, he thanked his wife and his kids by name. And it was actually really cool. It didn't go on for very long. Again, this was not a Hall of Fame induction as much as it was an angle. That's all this was. This was a setup for EC3 to come out, to trash talk Kurt. They played a really unfunny, corny video of EC3 attacking Kurt the week before. A few weeks ago, attacking his knee, and these little thought bubbles would pop up with unfunny stuff. It didn't work. But this set up Kurt and EC3 in a cage at Lockdown. Kurt Angle in a cage on pay-per-view. That is not going to end well. It's just not. Speaking of Angle, he wrote a column for the new issue of Fighting Spirit magazine in the UK. It was pretty open about a lot of things, including his drug issues. I want to read one piece of the article to you here, one interesting little passage he wrote that has to do with Samoa Joe. And this is what Kurt said. He said, "Joe is a guy who can carry any company. I have not seen much from him in the last 4 years, and that sucks. So it's time for TNA to start utilizing him in the right way, and if they don't, then he needs to go somewhere else. I'm being vocal about him because you don't have a talent like Samoa Joe and then just do nothing with him." And Kurt also said, "For the last 2 years, until I started my program with Bobby Roode, they didn't do one thing with me. I didn't have a storyline. I didn't have a title run. I was just treading water. I was waiting for something to happen, and nothing happened. Then I got vocal, and nothing still happened. It's good that we have new people in, both in creative and in talent relations." The Joe thing, I agree with 100%. How do you have a guy like Samoa Joe? Think about how long he's been with them for. I used to think of Samoa Joe as a Ring of Honor guy, and he's been with TNA long enough now where he's not so much a Ring of Honor guy. He's a TNA guy. He's been there for so long. He's been there for like 7 or 8 years, I think. That's a long time. What was the last really relevant usage of Samoa Joe in TNA? I can't remember. So at least now, they're actually doing something with Samoa Joe. He's in the main event of the next pay-per-view. He's challenging for the world title. He comes out looking like a badass. He's beating people with his move in a minute. This is the way Samoa Joe should have been utilized. I agree with Kurt Angle. And now we're starting to see that, and that's a plus. The alpha female is that woman who attacked Velvet Sky the week before, the China, you know, their China clone. At least the way they booked her, they booked her to be like a China clone. She and Lady Tapa beat Velvet Sky and Madison Rayne in a tag team match. Not much to it, really. Samuel Shaw, whatever the fuck his name is, he came out, he cut a promo, he was, you know, telling Christy Hemme, you know, basically we should be together and all this other creepy stuff. Ken Anderson came out with a made-up face to look like, you know, he had a black and blue marks all over his face, and he tried to come to Christy's defense, come to her aid. Sam Shaw put him in that judo choke. Now, I know it's a real choke. Like I said, it's a judo choke hold, but it doesn't look good. I don't think that works, at least not today, as a pro wrestler's finisher. Anderson was trying to fight his way out of it. I don't know. To me, it looked like he could have easily fought out of it if he wanted to, but he couldn't, and so he passed out, and he got laid out by Sam Shaw. And I didn't really like this at all. I mean, it'd be nice if they're finally going to get Sam Shaw in a feud. It looks like he finally has his first feud. That's a plus. But the stuff with Sam Shaw and Christy Hemme, I'm kind of over it. You know, it was interesting at first. Now it's just, I'm not into this. And we're going to start to see what this guy has. Because remember, he was a gut check guy. He is still relatively new. I don't know how many years of experience he actually has. They came up with this character for him. Which is, you know, something for him to do. But now he's going to have to start wrestling more. And it's going to probably be him against Ken Anderson, I would imagine, at Lockdown. So I'm very curious to see what kind of match this guy can have. Bobby Roode in the main event beat MVP with Austin Aries as the guest referee. Aries threw a forearm at one point on MVP, turned heel. Roode got the win. And so not only is Austin Aries gone heel, and he'll be on Team Dixie at Lethal Lockdown, but I like that it reunites Bobby Roode and Austin Aries, at least for this one pay-per-view it does. Because I really like the two of them together as a team. I thought they were very entertaining. They were doing that stuff at a time when TNA was underutilizing them. They weren't doing jack shit with those two guys. So they put the two of them together. They worked really well together. They were very funny, very entertaining. And I'm glad to see them back working together, working heel, which I think they're probably best at. And that was Impact. And, you know, on this podcast a couple of months ago, I argued that TNA should be built around guys like Samoa Joe and Austin Aries and Bobby Roode, and that's exactly what they seem to be doing. You know, it took them long enough, but I'm happy to see it happening. Those are the guys. Those three are the guys that they should be building around right now. And you bring in some new guys and fresh faces. I guess, you know, Sam Shaw is one of those guys. They may be bringing over some Japanese talent from Wrestle 1. Jeff Hardy's new character, Willow. I'm at least mildly intrigued to see, you know, how that plays out. So there's some good pieces in place right now in TNA, and the right people finally are being focused on. Speaking of the Japanese guys, I mentioned the great Muda earlier on. He is going to be in a match at Locked In. It's going to be Muda, Sanada, who I think is the new X Division champion, and Tigre Uno against Bad Influence and Chris Sabin. So that match is now official for the pay-per-view on March 9th. I want to mention a quick note here before we move on to the mailbag about AJ Styles. He wrestled for Preston City Wrestling over the weekend against a wrestler by the name of Lionheart. And unfortunately, Lionheart, much like Roderick Strong did in AJ's match with him in Ring of Honor, took a really bad spill on a Styles clash. And I'm just reading this here because as I'm recording this, Lionheart actually issued a statement. He got hurt, and he says in the statement here that he had an MRI done, and his neck is broken in two places. And they say that the only positive here is that no surgery is required, at least not right away. No immediate surgery is required, but never good to break your neck, let alone in two different places. So I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if these guys are just not taking the move right. I don't know if it's something that AJ is doing. This is the second guy now in the last couple of months. And you've got two pretty experienced guys here, especially Roderick Strong. I don't know about this Lionheart guy, but Roderick Strong's been doing this for a long time. And they're taking this move, and they're getting killed. You know, and Roderick Strong didn't have his neck broken, but this guy did. So I'm wondering if maybe AJ's going to have to find himself a new move. You know what? I was never even a big fan of the Styles Clash. I don't see what kind of real damage it does, except in real life these guys are getting their necks broken. But when I watched that move, I never really thought it looked like a devastating move or anything like that. It's almost like Big E's move. You know what I mean? I mean, Big E's big ending is a stupid finishing move. The Styles Clash is better than Big E's move, but what is it really doing? You know, you're falling down, and the guy's hitting the mat, right, chest first, flat, down on the mat. What kind of damage is it really doing, though? You know, at least the way AJ used to do it in TNA, maybe he was trying to do a safer version of it. It never really looked all that devastating to me to begin with. So maybe he should just find a new move. That might be a good suggestion at this point, because these guys are getting killed out there. And if WWE wasn't interested in him before, they're certainly not going to be interested in him now if he's going out there hurting people. So let's move on to the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. You can send audio questions, too, as an attachment, MP3 format, if you want to. I might possibly use it on the air. And when you write in, please include your name and where you are from. Thought from Melbourne, Australia. As you know, it's Sound Off 316 this week. Surprise, surprise, I've got a Steve Austin question. My favorite Austin moment that people hardly talk about was when Austin became the CEO of the WWF in 1999. He came out to a roaring reaction, took his power tie off, and made a match between himself, Vince, and his yellow-ass bastard son, Shane, at the King of the Ring pay-per-view that year. He then laid the evening card out with ridiculous stipulations. His segments at WWF headquarters as CEO were gold. He gave all the corporate front office people beers to drink, and his reaction when WWF, their accountant, said that there was no beer budget was priceless. Sadly, his CEO run was cut short since he lost to King of the Ring. What are some amazing moments from Austin's career that people hardly talk about? I think they talk about pretty much all of them. If there's one, I don't want to call it a great moment, but there's one really funny moment was, I guess it would have been 2000, maybe early 2001. I'm thinking 2000, when I don't even know who Austin was feuding with, to be honest with you. I think the Radicals were involved. They were, like, backstage. And Austin comes in. He knocks on the door. He comes in with food. So he's, like, masquerading as the food service delivery guy. And he's wearing a chef hat. Now, just picture Stone Cold Steve Austin with a chef hat on his head. I laughed my ass off for, like, hours after that. And I have, I think I have, like, a thumbnail image of it somewhere. Maybe I'll put that up, maybe, if I could find it. Because I saved it. I remember going on the website after that, and I was reading something, and there was this little thumbnail image of Steve Austin with a chef hat on and a cookie tray in mid-flight as he was about to bash somebody's brains out with it. That was kind of a funny moment that sticks out to me. But everything else, all the key stuff, Austin 316, the double turn at WrestleMania 13, the match with Rock and the turn at WrestleMania 17, the comeback at Backlash. You know what? If I had to name one thing, it's not underrated. People, you know, still remember this. It was a big moment, but I don't hear it talked about was when he came back in 2000 from the neck injury. Not the full return later that year, but he came back way too early because they wanted him at that Backlash pay-per-view to be in Rock's corner. And Austin had no business being out there because from that surgery, they don't release you And Austin was the first wrestler that I know of to have that spinal fusion surgery. So maybe because he was the first, they didn't have a protocol in place. But I know later on, like when Lita had it and Rhino had it and Benoit, you wouldn't get any sort of like medical clearance or release until at least 12 months later. And Austin had the surgery in January of 2000. He was in like a halo. He had a halo around his head for the first couple of months. And it was only 3 or 4 months later. There he was, coming out, doing a run-in. He looked a little overweight because he wasn't working out. So there were a lot of jokes about, hey, Stone Cold got fat. But out he comes with a steel chair because he couldn't do the stunner. So he's just beating the hell out of everybody with a steel chair. Chair shot to the head after chair shot to the head after chair shot to the head. And the place is going crazy. I mean, it was one, from the moment the glass shattered in that match, from the time that Rock then got the pin on Triple H to win the title, so you're talking about, I mean, maybe a 5-minute stretch, right? Or 3-minute stretch. That whole thing was one sustained 3 to 5 minute pop. Like, you get like a big reaction to wrestling, it's instantaneous. Like, that's what a pop is, right? This was sustained for 3 to 5 straight minutes. The crowd never shut up. It got louder and louder and louder. It was awesome. That's one of my all-time favorite Austin moments, and he really was in no physical condition to even be out there. So if I had to pick one that doesn't get talked about as often, that probably would be my pick. Cole from Philadelphia. So Daniel Bryan gets screwed at Elimination Chamber, and the next night on Raw, instead of kicking Triple H's ass, he gets caught by security and proceeds to point and scream at Triple H. Now, maybe I'm overreacting back in the Ruthless Aggression era, though. A guy like Eddie Guerrero would get screwed. He would go on a rampage the following week. Even John Cena would go on a rampage when he got screwed. So is it just me, or are the baby faces of today made out to look like bitches? That comes from Cole. It's not just you. Even John Cena today doesn't really react that way anymore. That may just be a Cena thing, I don't know. But yeah, they've all been pretty much emasculated. I mean, the worst was having to listen to Stephanie dress down Daniel Bryan on Monday night, and he just stands there and does nothing. But you know what? Look, it's not just Daniel Bryan. Even Batista. Now, Batista went heel. Maybe he'll be booked differently, but look at Batista. Batista's supposed to be this big badass guy, and you've got Triple H telling him in the back, hey, listen, Dave, things are different now. You can't do this. You can't do that. And he just stands there and he takes it, or he walks away. You know? At least he came out that one week and put Del Rio through the announce table. You know? That was like the most rebellious thing that a babyface has done on TV in like forever. Well, I mean, I call him a babyface, but that's what he was supposed to be. But you know how that goes. So you're definitely not the only one. It's a problem. Not every babyface can be the, you know, the rebel who goes around bucking authority, but you need at least one or two guys like that. They don't have anybody like that. Even Daniel Bryan, who's fighting the authority. I don't look at Daniel Bryan and go, wow, what a rebel. Because like you said, he stands there and he takes it. He's like a puss. And that's the way all the guys are booked. And I agree, it shouldn't be that way. Bryan writes in, with that ungodly performance from Cesaro at NXT Arrival, as well as Sami Zayn, Cesaro has reached beyond great when it comes to being a true ring general. I have a question, though. Do you think that Cesaro should be positioned as a top contender against Brock Lesnar sometime in the future? I don't know about you, but I see nothing but dollar signs if they ever let Cesaro and Brock go at it. Do you think it is a real possibility that this could happen this year? I do not see that as a possibility for this year, but I would love to see it. I think Cesaro is a newer guy. One of those new guys they could put up against Brock. It's not Cena. It's not Big Show. It's not Triple H. It's not Undertaker. He's a younger guy, a newer guy, and he's a freaking beast. And the only other guy on the roster that I refer to as a beast is Brock Lesnar. So you got two beasts in there together who are ungodly strong. It sounds like a fun match to me. I'd love to see Cesaro in there against Brock. Yeah, more likely, though, there's a lot of other guys I see them putting in the ring with Brock before Cesaro. Batista, for example, maybe with Brock being the babyface. I could see them wanting to do the match with Brock and The Rock at next year's WrestleMania, which was the plan for this year, according to The Rock. Even Daniel Bryan, that's a match I've pushed for. It's not going to happen at WrestleMania this year for the title, so that takes some of the luster off of it. But I still wouldn't mind seeing Bryan in there with Brock at some point, even if it wasn't for the championship. So I don't see it happening, unfortunately. Scotty D writes in. He says, since Batista has turned heel and I don't see Randy going babyface, what are the odds of not only adding Daniel Bryan, but Triple H as well to make it a fatal four-way, but with three heels against one babyface? I do not want to see Triple H fighting for the championship in the main event of WrestleMania. If he ends up on the WrestleMania card in a high-profile match against Bryan or Punk, fine. Fine. But him in a title match at WrestleMania, I do not want to see that. And I don't want to see, you know, an Evolution reunion in the main event, all ganging up on Bryan. I mean, I know exactly how they would book it, too. I mean, they would book it as, okay, we're stacking the deck against this guy. It's going to be essentially 3-on-1, but then when the match starts, you know, everyone's going to want to win, right? It's WrestleMania. The title's on the line. So there's going to be dissension. There's going to be infighting. You know, hopefully Bryan would get the win in the end. But I don't want to see it. I don't even really want to see a triple threat, but if that's the only way to get this guy in the main event, then so be it. A fatal four-way is even worse. I wasn't really a fan of the fatal four-way they did that one year at WrestleMania in 2000. It wasn't a bad match, but it should have been Rock versus Triple H. That should have been the main event in 2000. And so I'm not a fan of these multi-man matches as a main event for WrestleMania, and this one I just would have no interest in seeing. J.R. Sanders from straight out of Compton, California. This week, the Nevada State Athletic Commission banned the use of TRT, and there's a possibility that other commissions around the world will do the same. What do you think of fighters using TRT before it got banned, and how do you feel about it being banned now? I love it. I think it should have been banned a long time ago, and I think Brazil just announced they're banning it also. That's what they claim anyway. If they're going to enforce it, who the hell knows? I don't know how shady things are over there in Brazil when it comes to the commissions, but you're going to start to see a lot of these dominoes falling. I think a lot of other commissions are probably going to follow suit, and it's going to become the norm, and I agree with it 100%. I love it. Based on everything I've read up on this whole testosterone replacement therapy deal with fighters who get it, a lot of them who are on it, let's be real, are probably on it because they fucked up their systems by being on steroids for so many years. And how do you have sympathy for somebody like that? You know, they did it to themselves. You know, they cheated or they, you know, broke the rules or whatever. Now, you can't prove that every single person who needs testosterone needs it because they did steroids once upon a time. Maybe some people have a legitimate, you know, medical need for it. I'm sure there are some people who do. Doesn't matter, though. My argument is this. If you need something like that, and clearly it is a performance enhancer. That doesn't mean that it's going to enhance your performance to where you're better than the other person. Your argument may be, listen, I never did steroids. I never did anything bad in my life. It's not my fault, but I need this. You know, it's life or death. I need this. And what it's going to do, it's going to level the playing field. So it's not going to make me better than my opponent. It's going to at least give me a competitive edge. It's going to put me on the same level, and it'll be an even, fair fight. That's not the point. The point is, if you can't be at that level, if you are just naturally not as good because you don't have as much, you know, testosterone, guess what? You shouldn't be fighting. Go find a different profession. Not everybody is cut out to fight, just like not everybody is cut out to be a pro wrestler. That's just how it is. So you're going to see a lot of people now who probably retire, or they're going to have to go fight elsewhere because UFC is in favor of this. They love it. Dana White loves it. You know, you weed out all these people who are getting these exemptions and who in a lot of cases are probably only on this shit because they were doing a lot of other bad shit before. You know, and it's not fair. It's not fair to the other people who are not on it. I mean, shit, if I were a fighter, I'd love to be on testosterone replacement therapy. Give me that. I want that too. But that's kind of how I look at it. You know, a lot of these people who kind of put themselves in that position now are going to find out the hard way that it's not fair to the other fighters and you can't get away with it. And if that means that, all of a sudden their career is over, they can't fight, so be it. And if you are somebody who never did stuff before but you need this therapy, you're going to have to go find a different vocation. You can't be a fighter. That's it. Period. End of story. You're just not cut out for it. That's just the card that was dealt to you. So I love it. I think it's great. This comes from Ryan Rivera. I was skimming through the WWE Network, and much to my delight, I stumbled across my earliest memory of WCW, the 1990 Great American Bash. The opening contest pitted Flyin' Brian Pillman against the Nature Boy Buddy Landell. What was the story with Landell working the Nature Boy gimmick in WCW while Ric Flair was there, and World Heavyweight Champion, no less? Landell seemed to have read the instructions quite well after opening his Ric Flair starter kit, matching the Nate from the long flowing blonde locks to the robe, trunks, all the way down to the boots. I realized that Flair isn't the original Nature Boy himself, but arguably the greatest, and it had to have been odd to have the two of them working the exact same gimmick at the same time in the same promotion. Did they ever work a program with each other during this time? I don't know about a program. I know they had a match on TV. I think it was the only one they may have had. It was in 1990, and they billed it as the Battle of the Nature Boys with Flair going over. But yeah, I can imagine it was very weird. When I first saw Buddy Landell, I actually did not... I take that back. I did see Buddy Landell on WCW television. I was not a WCW fan back then. But I would go over to my grandparents' house, and my father and my grandfather would watch it. And I remember seeing Landell back then. I didn't see him again until he was in WWE very briefly in 1995. I remember he had a match with Ahmed Johnson. They brought him in for a pay-per-view. I think he got hurt, and he may have like tore his quad, and he never came back after that. I think he was due for a big push, but he got hurt. I know he was in Smoky Mountain for a little bit. He had a match with Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels did a shot when he was the Intercontinental Champion for Jim Cornette's promotion in 95. So Buddy Landell was a good wrestler, you know, but when I looked at him, I thought the same thing a lot of other people probably did. This guy is a Ric Flair knockoff. And forget the Nature Boy name. He looked like Ric Flair. He moved around like Ric Flair. His mannerisms were like Flair. His moveset was like Flair. He would bump like Flair. He was a Flair clone. And that's how I always viewed him, even though he may have been a talented guy. That's all he ever was to me. So I imagine with both guys in the ring at the same time, yeah, it was probably pretty weird. And finally, Matthew from St. Louis. On Steve Austin's podcast this week, he had Steven Regal as his guest. Regal mentioned about how much the boys loved Savage Steamboat at WrestleMania 3, as did he, until he talked to Steamboat about the match. After doing so, his opinion changed. Austin seemed to know where he was going with this, and both decided to leave it at that. What was the issue they were referring to? I got a similar question from Sean in Toronto. I listened to the interview. It was great, by the way. I highly recommend you check it out. The one that Austin did with Lillian Garcia was also really good. You should check that one out. When I heard them say that, I just assumed that it had to do with them finding out about how scripted and rehearsed the match was. You know, Savage had every move of that match mapped out months in advance, and he forced Steamboat to memorize it, and they would quiz each other every now and then to make sure they knew every single sequence. You know, you listen to Regal speak or Austin speak, that's not how they work their matches. You know, what does Austin always say? Let's call it in the ring, right? He always says that on his show. I don't listen to his show every week, but when he does interviews with guys like Regal, I listen, and I hear him say that a lot. Well, Savage and Steamboat didn't do that. They didn't call it out there in the ring. And that was all because of Savage. Steamboat has said, you know, people always talk about that match. They closely associate me with Savage, but him and Savage barely, if ever, spoke after that match. It's not like they were good friends or they worked a whole bunch of matches together after that. They didn't. And Steamboat doesn't think that match really was even the best of his career or anything close because he really didn't like working that way. That's probably what he told Regal. I mean, hell, I'd be miserable too if I had to memorize everything right down to the move like that, you know, months in advance. Two guys like that, Savage Steamboat, I'm sure they could have talked things over probably a few hours before the show, and they could have gone out there and tore the house down. But that's not how it went down. I assume that's what they were talking about. I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure. History has been made here! This week in wrestling history, we're keeping it brief. Only two events to go through here. 17 years ago this week, on February 26, 1997, WWE taped the March 3rd episode of Monday Night Raw from Berlin, Germany. This was actually the final show before Gorilla Monsoon declared Raw is War, and we got the giant Titantron in the stage the following week, which we've had ever since. WWE had been holding a tournament at the time to crown its first ever European champion, and the finals took place on this show between tag team partners Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog. Great match. Bulldog won after reversing a victory roll to become the very first European champion. And 16 years ago this week, on March 1st, 1998, ECW's first Living Dangerously pay-per-view is held in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Hometown of Bam Bam Bigelow, Beast from the East, who beat Taz to become the new ECW World Television Champion. After crashing through the ring with Taz on his back, a legendary spot in ECW history. Got over real big in the arena. Bigelow dragged Taz out of the giant hole that he made. Taz had been knocked out, and he pinned him to win the title. And that's it. That's all I got for you this week. There were some other things, but I'm trying to keep it, you know, somewhat limited, and didn't find a whole lot that happened that jumped out at me this week. But those are your two big events this week in wrestling history. I'm sure we'll have more next week. You can email me your questions at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Again, please include your name and town when you write in. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. I'll be live tweeting this Monday's Raw in Chicago, which I'm sure will be a very interesting show. We're all over Facebook. Please like our fan page that we have. We also have a profile, my profile. You can send me a friend request. And we have an official Solemonster Sounds Up closed discussion group on Facebook. We have got a huge influx of new members over the last week or so. I'm not quite sure why, but I'll take it. And so hopefully you are one of them. You can sign up. I will approve you for membership, and you can be part of our little community there. And don't forget to subscribe to our channel on YouTube. There's going to be two Sound Off Extras going up on YouTube this week, hopefully both of which are up by the time you listen to this. One of which will be my review of the Jim Ross one-man show this weekend in New York City, over half an hour. There'll be another half-hour video that goes up as well, my exclusive interview with Matthew of Botchamania. Yes, the Botchamania guy. We had a conversation about wrestling and botches and all that good stuff. It was a lot of fun. So subscribe to the channel, watch for those videos, and also make a PayPal donation if you have a little bit to spare. Show your support for the Sound Off. Keep the show going. And we're on Stitcher. We're in iTunes. And you can also leave reviews for the show in Stitcher and iTunes as well. That will help us. That will help our rankings and our ratings. And tell people, listen, they should be listening to this podcast like you are. So that's about it this week. Episode 316 in the books. We'll be back next weekend with episode 317. And we'll know by then, I guess, whether CM Punk is back in WWE or not. So until then, be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solemonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima.
The bad.
And I am back to headline WrestleMania, so deal with it.
And the ugly.
Then they have a hat. The hat itself is actually nice. It looks like a nice hat. What's wrong with this is it's a beard baseball hat. The entire brim of the hat is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
Well, mostly the good.
You can't disregard the fans. You can't disrespect the talent. I think we all want to see a change.
Solemonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solemonster Sound Off.